Welcome to this episode of Anatomy at the Art of Healing after a long pause. Today, I'm going to continue the detailed language of anatomy, explaining the different terms which are used to describe the various positions, planes, terms in relation to the various regions and movements related to the human body. First and the most is to know the normal anatomical position of the human body. The bipedal morphology makes the Homo sapiens sapiens stand on his feet with erect on the ground. The normal anatomical position is when a person is standing straight with the eyes looking forwards, the face looking forwards, both the arms by the side of the body, palms which are facing forwards, both the feet parallel together and the toes in the front. This is the normal anatomical position. Supine position, that is when a person is lying on his or her back and the arms are by the side and the palms are facing upwards and the feet are put together. This position is the supine position when lying on a table. And the prone position. In this position, the person is lying on his or her face and the chest and the abdomen is said to be in more prone position. And this position, you can see the person is lying with the face directed towards the ground. Next is the lithotomy position. Here, the person is lying on his or her back with the legs up and the feet are supported by the straps. And in this position, which is mostly used during the delivery of a baby or in some surgical procedures. Next, we can elaborate with the planes. A plane passing through the center of the body, it divides it into two equal right and left halves. This is the median or mid-sagittal plane. The plane which is parallel to the median or mid-sagittal plane, that is called as the sagittal plane. Imagine a plane passing through the center of the body and just parallel to that plane is another plane, and that would be called as the mid-sagittal plane. Next plane is a plane which is at right angles to the sagittal or the median plane, and this divides the body into anterior and posterior halves, and this plane is called as the coronal plane. Next plane is a plane which is at right angles to both the sagittal and the coronal planes, which divides the body into upper half and the lower part of the body, and this is the transverse plane. There are certain other terms which are also used to relate the trunk, like ventral or the anterior is the front of the trunk. Next is the dorsal or the posterior, which relates to the back of the trunk. Then is the medial. Medial is a plane which is close to the median plane. Next is the lateral plane, which is away from the median plane. Then is the proximal, cranial or superior, which is closer to the head part of the trunk. Then is the distal, caudal or inferior, which is closer to the lower end of the trunk. Superficial is a term which relates that it is close to the skin and towards the surface of the body. Deep away from the skin or away from the surface of the body is deeper or depth. Ipsilateral means towards the same side of the body as another structure. Contralateral, that is on the opposite side of the body from another structure. Another term which is used, that is invagination. Invagination is a projection inwards. Evagination is a projection towards the outer surface or outside. There are certain terms which are also used in relation to the upper limb, like ventral or anterior, that is the front aspect. Dorsal or posterior, it is the back aspect. Medial border, that is, which lies along the little finger or the medial border of the forearm and the arm. Lateral border is also a term which is explained in relation to the upper limb. This lateral border, it follows the thumb and towards the lateral border of the forearm and the arm. Medial border is sometimes also referred towards the ulnar border. That means the ulna is the bone which is towards the medial aspect of the upper limb and the forearm. Lateral border is also called as the radial border in the forearm. Proximal. Proximal is a term which is close to the root of the limb, while distal is away from the root of the limb. Palmar aspect is the front of the palm. Dorsal aspect is the back of the palm. Palmar and dorsal are related to the palm. Flexor aspect is in the front of the upper limb, and extensor aspect is the back of the upper limb. Some terms are also used in relation to the lower limb, like the posterior aspect, that is the back of the lower limb. Anterior aspect is the front of the lower limb. While describing the anterior aspects and posterior aspects of the lower limb, they're also called as the flexor aspect and the extensor aspect. In the lower limb, the posterior aspect is the flexor aspect, whereas the anterior aspect is the extensor aspect. Just reverse to the upper limb. Like in the upper limb, the anterior aspect is the flexor and the posterior aspect of the upper limb is the extensor aspect. So both are just reverse. In the lower limb, the medial border lies along the big toe or the hallux, the medial border of the leg and the thigh. The lateral border, it lies along the little toe, the lateral border of the leg and the thigh. So, the proximal part to the root of the limb, it is closer to the root of the limb. And distal is just away from the root of the limb. Some terms which are also used in embryology and comparative anatomy. Sometimes they're also used in the gross anatomy as well. So, ventral, that means towards the belly, like anterior. Dorsal, that means towards the back, like the posterior. Cranial or rostral, that is towards the head, just like superior. Caudal is towards the tail. These terms are commonly used in embryology while describing the embryo. Terms sometimes are also used for the body movements. These terms commonly used while you describe the joints and the muscles, movements of the muscles. So, movements in general at synovial joints are subdivided into four main categories, like gliding movement, angular movement, then rotation, and some special movements. So, movements are like the gliding movement, relatively in the flatter surfaces, which moves back and forth or side to side with respect to one another. And the angle between these articulating bones, that does not change significantly. The angular movements there is an angle between the articulating bones which increases and decreases during the movements. In flexion, you will see there will be a decrease in the angle between the articulating bones, and in the extension you will find that there is an increasing in the angle between the articulating bones. The lateral flexion is the movement of the trunk sideways to the right or left at the waist. Adduction at the trunk, you'll find that the movement of the bone is towards the midline, whereas abduction, you'll find that the movement of the bone is away from the midline. Like the term abduction is to taking away. So you'll see that the limb or the bone is moving away from the midline of the body. Similarly, adduction will be bringing closer to the midline of the body. Rotation, here you'll find that the bone revolves around its own longitudinal axis, or the part of the body it moves or revolves around its own longitudinal axis. In medial rotation, you'll find the anterior surface of the bone of the limb, it is turned towards the midline. And in lateral rotation, the anterior surface of the bone of the limb is turned away from the midline. Then there are certain special movements, and these occur only at certain joints. Like pronation and supination, they occur at the radioulnar joints. Protraction and retraction will occur at the temporomandibular joint, also at the scapula. In the upper limb, flexion is when two surfaces, flexor surfaces, they are brought closer to each other. For example, in the elbow joint, when the front of the arm and the forearm are opposed to each other. In the upper limb, the extension, when the extensor or the dorsal surfaces are brought in as much approximation as possible. For example, just straighten the arm and the forearm at the elbow. You'll find that it is in the complete extension mode. Abduction, when the limb is just taken away from the body. Adduction, when the limb is brought closer to the body. Circumduction, it is the movement of the distal end of a part of the body which moves in a circle. It's a combination of extension, abduction, flexion and adduction in a sequence, and then that forms the movement called as circumduction, just like in the movement of a bowling action. And medial rotation. Medial rotation, here you find the arm rotates medially, bringing the flexed forearm across the chest. And in lateral rotation, you'll find the arm rotates laterally, taking the flexed forearm away from the body. In supination, when the palm is facing forwards or upwards, as in putting the food in the mouth, or you can say supination is an action where the beggar just stretches his palm upwards and is in a begging position. Pronation is when the palm is facing backwards or downwards, as in picking food with the fingers from the plate. Or it's also an action of a king or a priest blessing. Adduction of the digits or the fingers. Here you'll find all the fingers get together in a straight way. That will be, they are brought close together. That is the adduction of the digits or the fingers. In abduction movement, you'll find all the fingers just move away from each other and they're stretched open. The axis of the movement of the fingers is the line passing through the center of the middle finger. So all the fingers move away from the axis of the middle finger. Then is the opposition of the thumb. When the tip of the thumb touches the tips of any of the fingers, just like as you count the numbers on your tips of a finger, that is the opposition of the thumb. Circumduction of the thumb, that is the moment of extension, abduction, flexion and adduction in sequence. And for the lower limbs, or also there are certain terminologies. In the lower limb, the flexion of thigh, when the front of the thigh comes in contact with the front of the abdomen, that is the flexion of thigh. And in extension of thigh, the person stands erect. In abduction, the thigh is taken away from the median plane, while in adduction, you'll find the thigh is brought close to the median plane. In medial rotation, the thigh is turned medially, while in lateral rotation, the thigh is turned laterally. There is a flexion of the knee. Here, the back of the thigh and the back of the leg, they come in opposition. In the extension of the knee, the thigh and the leg are in straight line as when you are in standing position. The dorsiflexion of foot, when the dorsum of foot is brought close to the front of leg and sole, which faces forwards. In plantar flexion of foot, the sole of foot or the plantar aspect of the foot faces backwards. In the inversion of foot, you'll find the medial border of the foot is raised away from the ground. In the eversion of foot, you'll find the lateral border of the foot is raised away from the ground. Next, coming to the movements in the neck. The flexion of the neck is when the face comes closer to the chest. In extension, you'll find the face is brought away from the chest. In lateral flexion, the ear is brought close to the shoulder. And rotation, the neck rotates so that the chin goes to the opposite side. Then is the opening of the mouth. When the lower jaw is lowered, that opens the mouth. It is also called as the depression of the jaw, lower jaw. Closure of the mouth, when the lower jaw is opposed to the upper jaw closing the mouth, or you can say the mandible elevates to close the mouth. Protraction, when the lower jaw slides forwards in its socket in the temporal bone of the skull. So the lower jaw just comes or projects outwards, that is protraction. Retraction, when the lower jaw slides backwards in its socket in the temporal bone of the skull, that will be the retraction movement. In the trunk, the backward bending. The backward bending of the trunk is also called as the extension. And the forward bending of the trunk is flexion. Sideward movements of the trunk is lateral flexion. While the sideward rotation is called as lateral rotation. There are certain terms which are used to describe the muscles. While you study the myology, the origin, the ends of a muscle which is relatively fixed during its contraction. The insertion is the end of the muscle which moves during its contraction. So it moves the bone while it is contracting. The muscle has the three parts. The belly is there, the tendon is there, and the tendon is attached to a bone, as well as the belly is attached to the bone. So it has a central muscular part having its origin and insertion and a belly. The two terms origin and insertion are sometimes interchangeable too. So when the origin moves and the insertion is fixed. So this is an exception. The belly is the fleshy and the contractile part of the muscle, whereas the tendon is the fibrous, non-contractile and the cord-like part of the muscle. The aponeurosis, it is the flattened tendon. Then there's the raphe, the fibrous band made up with interdigitating fibers of the tendons or the aponeurosis. Unlike the ligament, it is stretchable. That's the difference you find in the raphe, aponeurosis and tendon. The ligaments, these are fibrous, these are inelastic bands, and these connect the two segments of a joint, so it binds the joint together. There are also terms which are used to describe the vessels, like the arteries, the veins, the capillaries. The arteries, these carry the oxygenated blood away from the heart, with the exception of the pulmonary and the umbilical arteries, which carry deoxygenated blood. And the arteries, these resemble the trees because they have the branches or the arterioles. The veins, they carry deoxygenated blood towards the heart, while the exception of the pulmonary and umbilical veins, which carry oxygenated blood. So veins, these resemble the rivers because they have the tributaries or the venules, and these carry the blood towards the heart. Veins have the walls to allow the unidirectional flow of the blood. The arteries don't have any walls. Capillaries, these are the networks of the microscopic vessels which connect the arterioles to the venules. Anastomosis is the pre-capillary or post-capillary communication. This lie between the neighboring vessels. Now there are the terms which are also used to describe the bones and the bony features, like the elevations. Now, elevations can be in a form of a line, it can be in a form of a lip or a ridge or a crest. There can be sharp elevations, which may be a spine, a styloid process, a cornu or a horn or a hamulus. Now these terms can be used while describing certain bones and its parts. A rounded or irregular elevation, it can be a tubercle. If it's a much more bigger than it, it's a tuberosity. It's more sharper, then it's a epicondyle. If it's more broader, it may be a malleolus or a trochanter. A ramus is a broad arm or a process which projects from the main part or the body of the bone. So these terms are also used in many bones while describing its parts. Depressions. Depression may be in a form of pit. It may be like an impression, a fovea, a fossa, a groove or sulcus, or a notch. It may be also called as the incisura. There can be openings. Openings can be in a form of foramen, a canal, hiatus, or aqueduct. There can be cavities. A large cavity within a bone is called as a sinus. It can be called as a cell or antrum. Smooth articular surfaces or areas can also be present on the bones, and they can be called as facet, condyle, head, capitulum or trochlea. In this way, we describe the bony features. Now there are terms also used in the clinical anatomy. For that, you need to know about the suffixes or some prefixes which are used. The suffixes like itis. Itis means inflammation. For example, appendicitis, tonsillitis, arthritis, neuritis, dermatitis, etc. And the suffix ectomy, ectomy, means the removal from the body. It can be a removal of an organ, a structure. For example, appendicectomy, tonsillectomy, gastrectomy, nephrectomy. Next term is otomy. Otomy can be used, that means to open and then to close a hollow organ in certain surgical procedures. Laparotomy, opening up of the abdomen and closing it. Hysterotomy, opening of the uterus. In the similar way, cystotomy, opening the bladder. Then cystolithotomy, it can be opening of the bladder for removal of the stones. Then the suffix ostomy, O-S-T-O-M-Y, that means to open a hollow organ and leave it open. For example, cystostomy, colostomy, tracheostomy, etc. Here sometimes the part is left open, the hollow organ, it is opened and a certain instrument is kept inside in some surgical processes. The suffix oma, O-M-A, that means a tumor. For example, lipoma, osteoma, neurofibroma, hemangioma, carcinoma, etc. Many of the terms are there and these usually describe a tumor, and the suffix oma is always used there. Then is a term called as puberty. Puberty is the age at which the secondary sexual characters develop, that is being 12 to 15 years in girls and 13 to 16 years in boys. That is the term puberty. Then symptoms. Symptoms means those are the subjective complaints of the patient about his disease. And signs. Signs are the physical signs. These are the objective findings of the doctor on the patient. So doctor finds those signs on the patient. These are the objective findings. Whereas the symptoms are those complaints which are elaborated or explained by the patients about his disease. Diagnosis. Diagnosis, it is the identification of a disease or determination of the nature of a disease that is done by the doctor. Prognosis. Prognosis is forecasting the probable course and the ultimate outcome of a disease. Pyrexia, that means fever. Lesion. Lesion is the injury or a certain circumscribed pathological change in the tissues. Inflammation. Inflammation is the local reaction of the tissues to an injury or an abnormal stimulation caused by a physical, chemical or a biological agent, and it is characterized by swelling, pain, redness, warmth or the heat, and loss of function. Inflammation is also termed by the itis word. So you'll find the suffix itis wherever there is an inflammation. Edema. Edema, it's a swelling due to accumulation of fluid in the extracellular spaces. Thrombosis. Thrombosis is an intravascular coagulation or solidification of the blood. Embolism. it's the occlusion of a vessel by a detached or anti-circulating thrombus, which is also called as the embolus, and that occludes the vessel and it's called as embolism. Hemorrhage. Hemorrhage is the bleeding, which can be either external or internal. Ulcer. It's a localized breach or a gap or erosion in the surface continuity of the skin or the mucous membrane. Sinus. Sinus, it's a blind tract which can be open at one end and it is lined by the epithelium. Fistula. Fistula, it's like a tract which is open at both the ends and it is lined by the epithelium. Necrosis. Necrosis, it's the local death of a tissue or an organ due to irreversible changes. There is a damage to the nucleus and it's irreversible. Degeneration. It's a retrogressive change which causes deterioration in the structural and functional qualities, and it is reversible process, but it may end into necrosis. Gangrene. It's a form of necrosis or death of the tissue combined with putrefaction. Infarction. Infarction, it's the death or necrosis of a tissue due to sudden obstruction of its artery of the supply. Often here you'll find a end artery which is blocked or suddenly obstructed, and that will lead to the death of the tissue where it is supplying. Atrophy. Atrophy is the diminution in the cell size, the tissue, the organ, or a part due to the loss of its nutrition. So it becomes smaller in size. Dystrophy. Dystrophy is again diminution in the size, which is due to defective nutrition. Hypertrophy. It's the increase in the size without any increase in the number of the cells. In hyperplasia, you will find there is increase in the size, which is due to increase in the number of cells. Hypoplasia. Hypoplasia is incomplete development. Aplasia. There is failure of development. Syndrome. Syndrome, it's a group of diverse symptoms and signs which constitute together the picture of a disease. Paralysis. Paralysis, it is loss of the motor power or the movement of a part of the body due to denervation or primary disease of the muscles or because of nerve injury. Hemiplegia. Hemi means half, so paralysis of one half of the body. Paraplegia, that means paralysis of both the lower limbs. Monoplegia. Monoplegia is paralysis of any one limb. Quadriplegia. Quadra means four. Paralysis of all the four limbs. Anesthesia. That is loss of the touch sensibility. Analgesia. Loss of pain sensibility. Thermanesthesia. That is loss of temperature sensibility. Hyperesthesia, that is abnormally increased sensibility. Paresthesia is perverted feeling of sensations. Coma. Coma is deep unconsciousness. Tumor. Tumor, it's also called as neoplasm. A circumscribed, non-inflammatory, abnormal growth which arises from the body tissues. Now, tumors can be benign or malignant. Benign, this term explains mild illness or growth which does not endanger life. So there is a tumor, but it does not endanger life. It doesn't metastasize. It doesn't spread. Malignant. Malignant means it is a severe form of illness or growth, and it is resistant to treatment, and it spreads, it metastasizes to distant areas and may end into a fatal situation, a death. Carcinoma. Carcinoma is malignant growth arising from the epithelium, ectoderms or endoderm. Again, it's a malignancy. Sarcoma is a malignant growth arising from connective tissue, mesoderm. Cancer, a general term. It is used to indicate any malignant neoplasms which shows invasiveness and results in the death of the patient. Metastasis. Metastasis, this term is used for the spread of a local disease like that of the cancer cells, which spreads to the distant parts of the body. Convalescence, this term is that recovery period between the end of a disease and the restorative period to complete health. So this recovery period between the end of the disease and to the restoration of the complete health is called as convalescence. Therapy. Therapy is any kind of medical treatment. So this is all for today about all the terminologies and the language of anatomy. So we'll be continuing in the next episode. Until then, keep tuned. This is Dr. Rajeshwari Rappatta signing off. Hello, dear listeners. Do you know why I named my podcast as Anatomy at the Art of Healing? Well, studying anatomy at the student level is mainly for the exams. This is what the students believe. There is lots of scare about the cadaver, about the practicals, about the exams, about the viva and rectifying the technical terms which look like tongue twisters. The belief that anatomy is a basic subject and it is only for the first year is totally wrong. You need to remember the anatomy and the topics, the structures, whole of your life and about your medical practice. It will help you in your art of healing, whether it is conventional or it's the traditional Ayush system of medicine. If you understand the normal body structures and functions, it will help you to understand the soul of the medicine for treating the abnormal conditions. Unless you are fully thorough with the anatomical language, it will be difficult for you to understand and the describing the different anatomical topics. Today, you'll learn about how to study the organs and the introduction of different systems. In the previous episode, you learned about the tips of how to study the bones, joints, and X-rays. Today, you'll learn what is the organology, how to study the organs. When we talk about organs, they can be from any system of the body. You have to keep in mind and make notes about the definition and introduction of the organs, its anatomical position, the relations of other structures to the organ, its blood supply, the venous drainage, nerve supply, the applied anatomy, and the relevant diagrams. If you keep all these points in mind, just split the topic into points and make simplified mind maps to remember. Remembering the diagrams itself can help you write around 50% of the answers in the exam. The rest of the topic can be memorized by the mind maps. Believe me, this will help you score good in the written as well as in the Viva exams. Further, I tell you about different systems of the body and some of the important related terms. Human anatomy can be studied as regional anatomy. Here the body is studied in parts like upper limb, lower limb, thorax, abdomen, head and the neck, brain and the neuroanatomy. Systemic anatomy. They are like first the skeletal system, which is called as the osteology. The study of the joints, also called as syndesmology or arthrology. Muscular system, also called as myology. Cardiovascular system, it's also called as angiology. Respiratory system. Then digestive and excretory system. Immunity system or the lymphatic system. Nervous system or the systemic neurology. Integumentary system, which consists of skin, hair, nails and other exocrine glands. Endocrine system, which consists of all the endocrine glands and its study. Renal or the urinary system. Then you have the reproductive system and the connective tissues. Then the locomotor system, it's also known as the musculoskeletal system, consisting of the muscles, the bones, the whole of the skeletal muscles along with its tendons, ligaments, joints, cartilages and the connective tissues which bind them together. All these parts work together to allow the movement, thus locomotor system. Next is the embryology. So when you study the embryology, it's the developmental anatomy. The study is right from the formation of zygote till the formation of the fetus and the expulsion of the fetus, that is the delivery. Embryology is the study of the prenatal developmental changes in an individual. The developmental history, it is called as ontogeny. The evolutionary history, on the other hand, is called as phylogeny. Histology, it's also called as microscopic anatomy, and it is the study of the structures with the aid of a microscope. Next is surface anatomy. Surface anatomy, topographic anatomy. It's also called as topographic anatomy. Surface anatomy can be studied in two ways: living surface anatomy and the dead surface anatomy. Surface anatomy can be studied about the deeper parts of the body in relation to the skin surface. So it is very helpful in the clinical practice and the surgical operations. So you study what is beneath the skin, the location of the organs, the structures like arteries, veins, and all those structures lying beneath the skin. And you get an idea topographically, and that is quite helpful in the clinical as well as surgical operations. Radiographic and imaging anatomy. It is the study of the bones and deeper organs by plane and contrast radiography by ultrasound and computerized tomography, CT scans. Next is the comparative anatomy. It's a study of the anatomy of the other animals to explain the changes in the form, structure and functions. That's the morphology of the different parts of the human body. The other one is the physical anthropology. It deals with the external features and measurements of different races and groups of the people and with the study of the prehistoric remains. Both of these, comparative anatomy and physical anthropology, is quite helpful in the forensic medicine. Next is applied anatomy. Clinical anatomy. It deals with the application of anatomical knowledge to the medical and surgical practice. Experimental anatomy. It's a study of the factors which influence and determine the form, structure, and functions of different parts of the body. Genetics. Genetics deals with study of information present in the chromosomes. That's the basic information of different systems. The next topic will be about the skeletal system in detail. So before proceeding to the skeletal system, you should know the arrangement of the structures in the body from within outwards. For that, the bones, they form the supporting framework of the body. Muscles, they are attached to the bones. Blood vessels, nerves, and lymphatics, they form neurovascular bundles which course in between the muscles and along the facial planes. The thoracic and the abdominal cavities, they contain several internal organs called viscera. The whole body has three general coverings, and that's the skin, superficial fascia, and the deep fascia. So this is a basic information. While you study the skeletal system, all this will be relevant. This is all for today. This is Dr. Rajeshwari Rapta signing off until we meet in the next episode. Stay tuned for the next episode about the skeletal system.